You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza. And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. We're here today with Rose Carney, who's with the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin. More than 120,000 people in Wisconsin are affected by all forms of dementia. The ADAW focuses all of its efforts locally, offering insight, compassionate support, and assistance to those living with Alzheimer's disease or other dementias and their care partners. They do this by offering family services and support, education, and social programs and support groups for people with the dementia diagnosis.
So that's a whole lot of stuff, right? Rose, can you tell us a little bit about how you got into this work? What drew you to this?
Yeah, so I actually just graduated from my master's in social work about a year ago. And going into social work, I really wanted to focus on the aging population. So when I was finishing my master's degree, I actually was able to intern with the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance and just fell in love with the work that they do for caregivers and people with dementia, and have stuck around since.
Okay. And so this was something that you essentially found, or were you looking for it as an internship?
Yeah, actually my internship supervisor at the School of Social Work connected me with this organization. I didn't even know that this organization existed or there are similar organizations outside of, you know, the Alzheimer's Association. So that's okay. How I got connected. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
It sounds like a perfect match. I wanted to ask you, what is the first step for listeners to get connected? But before I do that, I'm going to just take a step back. And can you tell us a little bit more? I know I read off a lot about what the ADAW does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my role at ADAW is I'm the dementia outreach specialist. So we do kind of a variety of things for caregivers as well as people with dementia. So we do support groups for both caregiver and person with dementia, as well as different social programs, and do a lot of resource sharing with loved ones and collaborating with other agencies in the area as well.
That is wonderful. And I remember when I was researching some of the caregiver aspect, the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance came up for their amazing work that they did. So it looks like you're a real leader and role model in the industry. Now I'll go back and ask the question, how can listeners get connected?
Yeah, so we have our general phone number, which is 608-232-3400. And all you have to do is call. And a lot of times people will call and say, I don't know what I'm calling for. I just heard about you and someone told me to connect with you. So I would encourage you to also look at our website, because sometimes, you know, an education program or a support group can kind of pique your interest and be a good way to first step. But all you have to do is pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone and call.
That is really cool. And so I think I'm beginning to understand that your mission is as much for caregivers as it is for the people that are dealing with either Alzheimer's or dementia.
Correct. Yep.
Wow, that's cool. And could you take a moment? I'm not very well versed in this particular arena, and I am in a lot of other stuff. So people have heard me talk about other healthcare issues and caregiving. What's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia?
Yeah, so dementia is kind of an umbrella term. So it's a category of symptoms, but overarching dementia, there are different types of dementia. Like, okay. Alzheimer's disease is just one type of dementia, and there are many other types of dementia besides Alzheimer's disease.
Okay, got it. And so when somebody's dealing with this diagnosis, either for themselves or a family member or a friend, whatever, they can reach out to you to get more information about the disease as well as all of the different programming you have for the patient as well as the caregiver.
Yes, correct.
Okay, excellent. And I'm really intrigued by what I see on the website about the caregiver journey, this 4-week course. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And it looks like it's starting in June.
Yes. So that's actually an online program. So it's great because we're able to reach people in different areas, not just in the Dane County area. And it's ran by one of our other dementia outreach specialists that's kind of in the rural counties. Her name is Janet Weigel. And the caregiver journey is for caregivers, and it goes through the middle to late stages of what dementia looks like. And it's a really great program, not only to get education of what to expect during these stages, but also just to connect with other caregivers as well. It's a very special program because you get to be with these group of people for 4 weeks. So definitely would recommend.
Okay, so it's in an online format, but it's not like you do it at your own pace. It's like a regular standing time, so you can actually build and connect with the group.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Really cool. Thank you. I'm glad you guys are offering that.
Yeah, and thank you, Kristen, for asking that question, because that was a question I think I had in the back of my mind that I was too, I don't know, embarrassed to ask you. Like, I should know this. But on that note, do people call in, or do you invite people to call in where they think they may have a concern with a loved one, but there's not the diagnosis? Can you help them make the connections with resources, or do they contact you after they have a diagnosis?
So both. You know, we would really love to talk to people before, you know, they even have the diagnosis, but a lot of times we're getting referrals from social workers at, you know, the neurology clinic. But there's a lot of stigma behind dementia, and a lot of people are hesitant to even get checked out. So I would say we're about 50-50 with, you know, if they have a diagnosis or maybe just recently got a diagnosis.
Sure. That's great to know. And I see on your website, there's a whole list of both online and in-person support groups. One that caught my eye was the caregiver support group, of course. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and what topics you cover? When does it happen, and how can people get connected?
Yeah, so that caregiver support group that you're talking about specifically is actually a weekly support group that has been meeting online since the pandemic. And that support group is really great because it's a variety of people who maybe have just recently gotten diagnosed, their loved one has, to all the way to people who maybe's loved one are in a facility and are on hospice care and have been for quite some time. And so really it's a place to just check in with each other once a week, you know, problem solve any issues that you might be having, as well as just being a supporting environment. And, you know, it's a great group of people because we not only, you know, cry about for each other, but we also, there's lots of humor in there. And it's just a really great support system to have.
It sounds wonderful. And how can people get connected to that?
Yeah, they can, again, just pick up the phone. And I'm actually the direct referral for that one. And so then we'll able to step you through of how to get connected to that.
That sounds great. And then I see that there was some line in or online and in-person stuff. Do you have in-person things going on, or have you shifted to solely online?
Yeah, in Dane County, we're solely online, but hopefully in the month of June, we're going to be seeing more in-person programs. But in the rural areas, they're all in-person. So, but you know, Zoom has been a great thing for our organization because some people who can't leave their caregivers at home, I mean, their loved ones at home can't join in person. So it's a great connection. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really valuable tool. I have so many more questions to ask you about how you guys were able to put together such great caregiver resources, but it's time to take a break. So I'm going to give you a moment here to kind of think, where did you get all of this knowledge as an organization to put together such amazing resources? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and we'll be back in just a moment with Rose from listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Kristen, and I'm here with my co-host Liza and Rose, who is with the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin. So before we went to break, Rose, I was trying to ask, I'm just really impressed by how much of an equal position you're giving to caregivers in your programming as you are to people with a diagnosis of either, well, now I'm understanding, of any type of dementia, right? And I'm wondering, how did the organization get to that place? Or more importantly, can it be a model to other organizations? It's just really striking me in our conversation just how much you're valuing the caregiver as an equal component.
Right, exactly. So it actually was this past year that we decided to do a support group for people with dementia because of people with dementia asking for a support group and caregivers saying, you know, I have a place to talk about what's going on, but my loved one doesn't. And so it really was because of the advocacy of people with dementia and us listening and trying to see what would work for them that encouraged us to do that. And it's definitely very valuable and important.
Yeah. Okay. Now it's totally flip-flop of what I thought it was, which is great. It's good. That's why we have these conversations. So you're saying you guys had support groups for the caregivers first.
Mm-hmm.
And what, why do you think you were able to do that as an organization? Put the caregivers, because if we think about the Autism Society or I can't remember anybody else we've had here right now, the Epilepsy Foundation, the last thing they're thinking about is the caregivers. They're always thinking about the person with autism or the person with epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding or listening to you that it's almost flip-flopped. Am I correct?
Yeah. And I think it's because here in Dane County, what's really great is that we're catching people very early on in the disease. Okay. So they're able to communicate, you know, more effectively and be able to process things more. But, you know, we're really a big thing that we stand for is, you know, caregiver stress and how much that affects, you know, not only yourself, but your loved one.
Exactly.
And that's really been a strong thing that we're your partner along the journey because it's an equal amount of stress for both sides.
Oh, I love it. I love that you guys see it that way and you're addressing it. That's excellent. And I'm hoping to drive more organizations to look at your model because it would be great for the caregivers to be seen as equally stressed, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's kind of the whole purpose of why Liza and I are putting this all together.
Yeah,
you tend to be the tag along or the, you know, the last thought.
You can see why they are a role model. And in so many, I guess, specifically nonprofit organizations that revolve around disability and illness, you see caregiver and part of their mission. But then when you explore their website, it's like, where exactly are they supporting the caregiver other than maybe to give them some website links? So it is truly amazing the work that you guys are doing. And on that note, I saw on the website that you have respite grants available. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how people can get connected?
Yeah, so we have a respite grant coordinator, Mary Severson, and she's in charge of the AFCSP grant, which is a grant specifically for people with dementia to receive types of funds for in-home care, as well as in adult day centers. And a good way to get connected to that is, you know, reaching out and seeing if you're eligible for that type of grant. But Mary's another person that you just have to pick up the phone and call and see if you'd be eligible for it.
That is wonderful. And I'm sure that the respite grants are always in need of funding and more funding could be helpful. So can you tell us about some of the upcoming fundraisers that you have and other ways that people can sponsor your organization?
Yeah, so we have some third party kind of fundraising events up and coming, such as the Sip and Chip golf event, as well as Bailey's Run, which is a really fun event to be at the winery. But more importantly, our biggest fundraisers are our walks that are in August, September. And I think we even have one in October weekend across Wisconsin. And it's, you know, a really great time to see how many people are affected by this disease, as well as raising funds for not only the caregiver grant, but also some of the programming that we do at our organization.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I saw the Bailey's Run and I saw wine and I thought, oh, Kristen and I can get behind this 100%.
Well, and then my first thought was, oh, do you get Bailey's at the end of the run? But I'm fine with just wine. So that's great. Well, those sound like really fun events and a great organization and you know, process to support. So let's go back to more of like your experience and your perspective on what it's been like to be working with this organization and the caregivers. And so as a caregiver, I think oftentimes I realize I can get lost in the weeds, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what I should know. And I want to give you the microphone and people that work with caregivers an opportunity to say something that you wish all caregivers knew. Right. So if you had like three things that you were like, I wish you guys all understood this, what would they be?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is reaching out for help early on before you think you need it. If that's, mm-hmm. you know, calling an organization like us to see, you know, what resources are out there, but even tapping into family and friends, even, you know, a simple thing like making a meal or helping with housekeeping, because you can't do this alone. Another thing that I would say is blame the disease, not the person. With dementia, there are a lot of, you know, personality changes and maybe behaviors as well. And this person that maybe you've been married for 60 years is now acting like a complete stranger. And it's really hard to know, is this my husband who's making me annoyed or is this the dementia? So we always think it's good to blame the disease because of how awful it is and how many behaviors that can come from it.
And I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think the third thing is, you know, to know that you're not alone. This disease can make people, for both the caregiver and person with dementia, isolate themselves. And we see a lot of people stop going to social events because of this. So know that you're not alone and that there are people out there who are going through the same thing. And it can be very helpful to talk to others. So again, just reaching out for that help is very important.
Those are great recommendations and advice. And I always wait, I say this every week, that I always wait for people to say, you're not alone, mm-hmm. because it comes up. And you said that, but then you also said, you can't do this alone, which I think is, you know, a good thing for people to hear, because a lot of people feel like they have to do it alone, or they need to do it alone, or they're the only ones that could possibly, you know, take care of this person. And it's not realistic. You know, you have to be able to reach out for supports, if anything, for yourself and your own well-being. And on that note, what is some advice or recommendations that you would give to a person that knows a family that's going through this? So maybe the neighbors, you know, the wife is taking care of the husband. How can they help out?
Yeah, I think this is a very important question, because what we've heard from the people that we work with is that friends kind of disappear when they're diagnosed with dementia, or they're fearful of telling them because they almost think that dementia is contagious. Mm-hmm. And so I think the best way to support, you know, your friend or loved one who's going through this experience is really just listen to what they're going through and not judge them for anything or make any assumptions. And asking the person with dementia what they're going through as well. A lot of times people ask a caregiver, you know, how is your husband or wife or whatever, you know, whoever is doing.
Sure.
And that can make the person with dementia, you know, even more stigmatized and feel alone as well.
Excellent. Because you're saying they aren't actually talking to the person directly.
Right. They're not talking to the person directly. They're asking about them, you know, through their loved one.
Sure. And that makes some sense. And that's where I want to ask this question about, because you said a lot of times here in Dane County, we are catching people early on in the disease. What can we say to them about the best way they can work with their caregivers?
So the people with the disease working with their caregivers.
Right.
Okay.
So essentially, like, what advice or recommendation, if I'm receiving the care and I'm still able to understand it's because I have dementia?
Sure.
Right. What's something that I should be told or could be told about how I can support the caregiver while I'm still, is it right. okay to say while I'm still cognitively available? Like, I don't even know the language that's okay to say around.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think the number one important thing is that, you know, if the person with dementia is able to, and they have the insight of what they have, is to communicate how they're feeling to their care partner. I think a lot of times care partners don't realize that, you know, when you huff or when you sigh, that makes me very anxious. And, you know, it makes me want to not even ask you any more questions. So I think it's really important to just have that open line of communication between the two.
Sure.
And as well as, you know, just because you have a diagnosis of dementia doesn't mean that your life is over and there's not a, you know, a good quality life that you can live and strive for.
Okay.
And I think those are, you know, two important things to consider, because in helping yourself, you're then helping your care partner as well.
Sure. And that whole topic of language is, are you typically using the term care partner instead of caregiver?
We try to. Yeah. And, you know, it's really about what people feel comfortable with referring sure. themselves, because some people say, I'm a caregiver, I'm not a care partner. While others, you know, so we, you know, whatever people feel most comfortable with.
Right. That's what we try to do too. But I think it's interesting. I think for me, it feels so natural to call myself a caregiver because the person I'm taking care of is my adult child. So we've already mm-hmm. kind of had this different hierarchical, you know, relationship between parent and child. But when or if it's time to take care of a spouse, where it has been, you know, of a more sure. equal partnership all along, it probably would feel a little bit better to use the term care partner. So right. just interesting. You just got me thinking a lot today, Rose.
that's an excellent point. And we didn't share, both Kristen and I got into this because we have adult children mm-hmm. with autism, and Kristen's daughter, Nicole, has epilepsy and intellectual developmental. Oh,
that's okay. An intellectual disability.
Intellectual
too.
Disability.
It's a whole mouthful. It's a whole mouthful.
Easy
but
for me to say.
She's special needs.
Yes, yes. So, you know, we know what that world is like, but if you could tell us a little bit how caring for someone with Alzheimer's or dementia is different, maybe some of the added stressors, responsibilities, or tasks that specific type of caregiving is required.
Yeah. So I think, you know, just like you were saying, is that it's different when it's your spouse, because this is a change in relationship for the two of you with this disease. So it can be emotionally very hard, just like any caregiving, but especially, you know, trying to navigate this change of disease. And also dementia is different every day. What might work one day might not work the next day. And it's really hard because when you meet one person with dementia, you meet one person with dementia. Sure. And so every type of dementia, you know, might progress in a similar way, but depending on that person's background, personality, if they have any other, you know, type of illnesses, that all plays a factor. So it's really tricky to figure out, and you can't really make a map way of how it's going to look, you know, 10 to 20 years from now, because some people can live with this disease for a very long time.
Yeah. And that's interesting that it's so personalized. I mean, it makes sense, right? Because it's the brain, mm-hmm. just like so many of the other things that we've been talking about. But dementia, Alzheimer's is a disease of the brain. And when you have a disease of the brain, it's going to be, you know, very much individualized, because our brains are so, and I didn't know this until I was teaching psychology. Do you know that our brains are as individualized as our fingerprints? I didn't know that.
I thought
they were more like our liver and our heart, and maybe our livers and hearts. I mean, there might be a cardiologist listening to this is like, well, she's really off. So are our hearts. But I just kind of thought all our organs were the same. And, you know, I just didn't understand how unique they were.
I would believe that. I feel pretty confident nobody has a brain like mine, for good or for bad. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. We'll be back after this short break.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Kristen, and I'm here with my co-host Liza and Rose Carney, who is with the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin.
In our last segment, we like to ask what we call powerful questions, those that kind of push you to go inward and reflect on your personal thoughts and experiences. And so the first one that I have for you, Rose, is what are some positive takeaways that caregivers can get from this experience? I kind of think of the saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. What are some reoccurring themes that you see with the people that you serve?
Yeah, I think this is a great question, because I think a lot of times people look at, you know, the negative experiences that caregiving has. But, you know, caring for a person with dementia, you know, you get a chance to really connect with your loved one in a deeper way, and to be able to, you know, create this new relationship if that's about reminiscing about the past, or, you know, even again, humor is so important in caretaking, and having that quality time for a person is definitely a very positive takeaway.
That's wonderful. That gave me the chills. There's always a time in the show when someone just says something that just hits you right, like square in the heart, I guess. And that right. is a great message.
Excuse me. Yeah, exactly. And it's also striking me that it probably causes couples and families to slow down. Mm-hmm. And to be more present to one another, right? To live a little bit more in like what we have here and now, which, if you look at all of the research and all of the mindfulness that we're trying to do post quarantine, that, you know, so much of our mental health has been impacted. And what we really need to do is take the lessons from that experience of slowing down and being present.
Sure.
Yeah. What do you find though in the situation that you're in, this role, right? There is this positive spin that we can pull, right? That it causes us to slow down and be in the present, but there's got to be things that are specifically challenging. And so I'm sort of curious about what's your biggest challenge in your role at the ADAW?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge that I have is that sometimes I don't have the answers to these tough questions and my hands are kind of tied. And, you know, there are certain situations in caregiving where you just kind of have to ride the waves and you really don't have an answer or solution. And so that's really difficult for me when I'm on the phone and someone's asking, what do I do? And I have no, you know, straight black and white answer for them.
Sure.
That would be hard. You know, as going into social work, you want to be a problem solver, right? And not all problems have easy solutions. If you had unlimited time and resources, what would you do to support your organization, or what would your dream outcome look like?
Yeah, I think, resources for money for caregivers as well as people with dementia, to just have that in-home care and support, and, you know, being able to afford to go to an adult day center, being able to afford to go to therapy. I mean, it really comes down to money, right? And a lot of the things that people need and is a necessity but might not be able to afford. So I definitely think public funding for, you know, those type of things, for both.
Definitely makes sense. You got to be able to take care of yourself. The whole putting the oxygen mask on yourself first is key.
Can you speak a little bit to what these adult day programs are like for people that, I've heard you reference it a couple times, and I know we're more of a caregiver show, but I'm also feeling like if people are listening to this and they are wondering if dementia and Alzheimer's is kind of percolating in their family, if you could sort of paint a picture of what happens when you do have dementia in regards to your daily stuff.
Right. Like an adult day center, explaining
yes,
what
please.
That is. Yeah. So there are different adult day centers that are around Dane County. And I kind of see them as a step further than a senior center, but not as far as going into a memory care facility. And so this is a place where people can gather and socialize with other older adults and do different activities, as well as eat meals. And some even offer showers if that seems to be an issue for you at home. Some even offer hair salon care. And it's a place where, you know, caregivers can then get a break and they have their own respite, while the person with dementia is also able to get a break from their caregiver and interact with other individuals as well.
Yep, that was a very good reminder about how they need a break from us just as much. Every time I take Nicole to either Badger Camp or Camp Wabik, some of the camps that are out there in Wisconsin for adults with disabilities, they remind me, like, she's getting a break from you too. And I was like, yeah, she probably needs it, right? So that's a great way to look at that. Again, it's helping both sides of the equation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool, all these things that you're sharing. Do you have a particular, like, one or two rewarding experiences that you'd like to share with people about what it's been like to be in this role?
Yeah, again, it goes to that problem solving aspect. This world is very hard to navigate, and our healthcare system is super hard to navigate. So when someone calls and I'm able to kind of explain things and be able to, you know, navigate what next steps are, and they say, you know, before this call, I was feeling a weight on my shoulders where now I feel like it can breathe again. And that's definitely rewarding, you know, even if it's one or two sentences or me just giving them a space to listen. It's rewarding that people are walking away with a sense of relief instead of more of a burden.
Sure.
Yeah, that has to be a wonderful feeling. I mean, especially when somebody first gets the diagnosis, or you're thinking that this might be something that you're going to have to deal with, that overwhelm and fear and all of that anxiety that goes along with it. So that's mm-hmm. wonderful that you can help people through their journey. Do you have a motto or a saying that you like to share with caregivers?
Yeah, I like to share the motto with caregivers and people with dementia, which actually was made from a group of people with dementia. And we say at the end of each of our groups, which is, you are strong, you are brave, and you rock.
I love it.
I love it. That's great. So Rose, you got into this because you were, I'm really appreciating your warm and just kind of gentle presence. And so you got into this because you wanted to be a social worker, but what drew you towards either dementia or towards caregiving? Do you have any personal experience?
Yeah, so I have a personal experience with my grandpa, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's for 6 years before he passed. And okay. So, you know, working with him, he lived in a memory care unit, and visiting him definitely played a huge impact in seeing my mom go through, you know, sure. this role and how hard it was. And we had no idea organization like this even existed. So that definitely drew me. And also my experience working in the nursing home and just seeing, you know, what people with dementia go through as well as their caregivers. And you know, it's more than just memory loss. And, you know, it's hard when your family member doesn't remember your name, but it's also hard when your family member is acting out in these strange behaviors. And mm-hmm. If I can be any, you know, sort of help to relieve that stress that caused my family, you know, it's a great way to give back to those who helped us in those times as well.
Sure. Is there anything particular from that time frame that you kind of lean on to get, like, rejuvenated or to use as a resource when you're working with people?
Yeah, definitely. Especially when, you know, someone's situation is very similar to the way my grandpa was, you know, I always think back, you know, if I could spend time with my grandpa now, knowing what I knew, it is definitely, and I definitely have those names in my head of the people that touched my heart working at the nursing mm-hmm. home that I always think back to of, you know, this is why I'm doing this. It's mm-hmm. for these people. So definitely.
You know, when you think of Alzheimer's and dementia, unless it's hit you, you may not have a lot of knowledge, like Kristen and I readily admitted. You could do probably endless shows on the topics. But what are some of the 101, or what are some of the red flags to be looking out for?
Sure. So definitely memory loss is, you know, one of the first things that we think of, such as short-term memory, you know, maybe getting lost to, you know, driving to the store or a familiar route is definitely one of those signs, but as well as personality, you know, changes, you know, being able to navigate space, you know, maybe there are different, you know, excluding yourself from others, you know, withdrawing from social situations. Some people even notice first signs by hearing loss that they're having, or perceiving that they're hearing something that's not really there. Maybe it's their vision. There are all types of signs and symptoms. And sometimes memory is one of the last things that a type of dementia affects. Sometimes it's that personality change that's the first sign. Lighting is a huge sign if lights seem to be bothersome for you, but it's really hard because a lot of these things mimic, you know, medical problems right. that we always have, you know,
sure.
that is normal to aging. So when it gets to that line where it's more than just normal aging, it's, you know, just so important to get checked out.
And so with your grandfather, was it something he was willing to go do, or was it something that other family members kind of had to push him towards?
Yeah, my grandma passed away a couple months before we noticed those signs, because she was covering up for a lot of the things that he was missing. So he was one of those who it was his memory, but it also was his driving. You know, he came home with, you know, a dent in the car. Of where did that come from? And actually, funny enough, it was Hy-Vee that called my aunt one day and said, this man has been in 4 times to buy a dozen of eggs. And, you know, we have a special place in our heart for Hy-Vee because of that, because they were right. willing to reach out to my aunt, and were just very kind about it. So those were, you know, sometimes it is that spouse that's covering up those things away from the children.
Sure.
So yeah, we didn't notice that until she passed.
Yeah. Well, maybe not even covering up. I'm sure there are some people intentionally doing it, but just not even realizing, like you said, it's a lot of these symptoms are common with aging.
Right.
Yeah. So where would be the first stop if you started to experience these concerns on your own or noticed it with a loved one? You go to the general practitioner, and then where do they send you from there?
Yeah. So then you would ask to be referred to a memory clinic. So that can either be a neurologist or even geriatricians who are able to do a thorough evaluation. And these evaluations are a long time. They can be up to 3 hours or even, you know, half a day. But it's really important to advocate, you know, for this diagnosis, because even we have issues where primary doctors will, you know, just say it's normal aging. So it's really important that you advocate, because you know what you're like at home and what your loved one is like at home. So it's very important to, you know, push for that referral to a memory clinic.
I'm so glad that you said that, because that's so true. And it is true for our experience with our son with autism. You know, we got a lot of I don't think so's, and we had to really advocate, which makes me wonder, is it hard to get this diagnosis?
Very, very difficult. And a lot of times people will go to memory clinics and end up with a diagnosis of mild cognitive impairment, which is also known as MCI, which is, you know, cognitive symptoms, but it's not an actual, you know, diagnosis of dementia that will then be progressive. So it's very difficult. And sometimes it takes up until autopsy to really see what type of dementia it is.
Wow.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Really fascinating. And that is helpful to know that that's one of the things that our listeners can take away, right? Is this idea that we don't want to minimize this. And I think we briefly touched on it, but it's got a lot to do with that negative stigma and fear, mm-hmm. right? Aging is a natural part of life, and it's fearful of what that means and what that's going to be for us. Rose, this has been an excellent and really eye-opening conversation today. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been a great opportunity to learn more about your organization and just steps that people can take.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we'll be back after this message. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen, and we just spoke with Rose from the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin. I can't believe how much I learned in such a short amount of time. What was one of your biggest takeaways, Kristen?
I know I could sit here and tell you about a lot of facts that I just learned, but I'm really realizing I'm going deep. I mean, it just really got me thinking about how scared this culture is to age. And that's really about how scared we are to die. So it's actually reminding me of some of the conversations we had with the folks from Agrace, because I think if we weren't so fearful of that, we wouldn't avoid it. And then there wouldn't be this negative stigma around Alzheimer's and dementia, right? And so I think what struck me is how sad it is that we don't know more about it, that we've got these kind of general movie images of somebody with Alzheimer's, and it seems pretty tragic. And I don't know that Alzheimer's is the sad part as much as how our country and our society is responding to Alzheimer's is the sad part. I think that's what I'm really pulling out of my thoughts right now.
Yeah. How about you? Yeah, that makes sense. Well, it hits home to me. My grandma passed away of this as well. And so I am a little stuck on the sadness part, but, you know, sure. That's to be expected when you have somebody that, you know, you love, you grew up with, who was your role model your whole life, and you go to see them and they don't know who you are. You know, it's hard to deal with, but that's wonderful that they have so many supports. And I just took away the way that they're set up, that they give the caregivers that equal amount of support, mm-hmm. really seems like something that a lot of organizations could model themselves after.
Right. And do you think, I mean, you don't know, right? We just found out about this organization in Rose today, but I'm wondering, like, what do we hope listeners, or what do we hope we can do in our work to model that or to keep bringing that forward? What do you think was the key to their success? I'm not sure I have it figured out quite yet. Do you?
I don't. Other than I would imagine that this particular type of caregiving role really requires a lot of support for the caregiver. I mean, it's one of those that is really emotional. Like she said, things change and can change rapidly. And I would imagine at certain points they require higher levels of care. So they kind of have to be included, if that makes if that makes sense.
It does. It does make sense. And especially if they're not necessarily, they, the patients aren't necessarily able in the later stage to even advocate or be aware of kind of who they are and what's going on, then there's so much more responsibility for the caregiver, right? And so I can see where maybe the organization had to develop. I'm just now intrigued in their history, but I'm wondering like if they had to develop, you know, from the caregivers first and foremost, where I think in a lot of autism, epilepsy, you know, the other examples I was giving, cancer, it's coming from the people that have the disease themselves. So maybe when you're building something from the perspective where you need the caregiver as the actual person being the one who's speaking for the disease, then you actually start building programming that's equally supporting them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what that means in terms of what do we take away from that today, except maybe as we face new diseases, there's some people that we're coming across in some of the work that we're going to be doing. That woman that we met in our Circles of Life presentation, that's a conference that's coming up in a couple weeks. And Liza and I have the privilege to be able to be part of a panel. Well, a couple of those parents talked about rare genetic diseases for their kids. And so I feel like there's going to be more and more of these organizations and foundations that are having to develop around what we're beginning to understand with medical technology. And I hope, and I know, and I encourage us and our listeners to really say from the ground up and from the beginning, let's put caregivers as an equal component to that. So we're not going back and trying to include them as an afterthought.
Yeah. I like that. And I do like how she said care partner. And that was really interesting when you went back and thought about that a little bit more, that, yeah, as a child, you may be a caregiver to your child, but, you know, a spouse, that's been your partner your whole life. So to keep that in context and remember that you guys are partners in this.
Right, exactly.
I think one of the biggest takeaways is Rose said it perfect. You are strong, you are brave, and you rock.
Exactly. I love that. And that's something we're definitely going to have to keep centered around what we're doing here at the Empowered Caregiver Community. I want to make sure that people are aware of some of our upcoming stuff, right? We're moving into May, a whole new month, and we're going to be focusing a lot on political and legislative advocacy. We'll be hosting our virtual town hall on May 21st, Saturday at from 9 to 10. We would love people to tune in and listen to our conversations that we'll be sharing around what legislators can do to support caregivers here in Wisconsin. If you want to be more interactive, you can go to our website, the empoweredcaregivercommunity.com, and you can sign up to actually be engaged in the online chat that will be happening as we're discussing things live.
Yes, that would be wonderful. I can't wait for the opportunity to meet some of the listeners via chat online and hear some of the stories. So again, join us on May 21st. Everyone is welcome. You can register for the virtual town hall again at going to the Empowered Caregiver Community.com.
And please feel free to start following us on all our socials at Facebook, Instagram. You can get more information about the virtual town hall if it's kind of confusing to you, as well as some of our upcoming programming around workshops and all of the links for the last 10 episodes that we've done here at the Empowered Caregiver Radio Show.
They are.
And so it's a great place to hit.
And
right?
I think we checked all of our boxes and we still have a few seconds left. So I'm going to end on a high note on a good caregiver story. Why not? Right. Sure. So my son was accepted into the Cutting Edge program at Edgewood College. So we're super excited about that. We got news this week that he received a grant from Middleton High School. So we get to go to an awards ceremony for that. And then I opened my inbox today to see that he was accepted into the Youth Leadership Forum through the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities.
All right.
So
Yay.
That young man is rocking it. And I'm going to give myself a little little pat on the back as a caregiver because we're a team.
Exactly. Nice work there, folks.
Yes. See you next week.
See you next week.